Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament. 30 Minutes in the New Testament is a 1517 podcast network podcast. You can go over to 1517 and you can go, and right there you will find The Soul of Christianity, the brand new seasonal podcast released by 1517. It's featuring Debbie Winrich, Dr. Daniel Van Voorhis. They are talking about the Apostles' Creed. They're interviewing theologians, pastors, professors about the articles of the creed. And that'd be a good thing to do, considering that it'll get you all prepped up for next year's Here We Still Stand. Here We Still Stand 2019, The Common Faith, where we're going to theme the conference around the articles of the creed, do breakouts on additional things that we believe. It's going to be a great time. You can go over to herewestillstand.org and you can register. And here's the thing, you should really do that, because it's over 50% sold out right now. Already. Woo. Already over half sold out. You know why that's the case? And that is the case because it's not a terrible time. It's actually awesome. And everyone that registered knows it's awesome. And people that have come before are going again because they know it's awesome.
If you had just left it at because it's not a terrible time and no other things, that would have been not the best sales pitch.
Well, you know, what I'm saying is things don't get 50% sold out when they're not good. What I'm telling, like in a week. So
it is awesome.
You need to get over there and do that. If you want to come, man, take care of the airfare later. Take care of the hotel later. Just get the ticket now so you can get your spot reserved, because it ain't going to be there that long. And while you're, you know, on the internet getting that ticket to Here We Still Stand, might as well open Amazon if you haven't done this and get a copy of that Scandalous Stories, a sort of commentary on parables by me and Eric. We wrote that book just for you so you could understand the parables of Jesus better. Jesus says that the parables reveal what has been hidden from the foundation of the world. Do you want to know the secrets of the universe? Me and Eric have unlocked them all for you in this user-friendly volume. Get over there, Scandalous Stories. You can have it for under $10, and then you can rate and review it, which is what we need you to do on Amazon with that 5-star bad boy review. Do it. Eric, how's it going, man?
It's going good. I got it, man. I am marveling right now at your seamless ability to tie in all the things in such a quick manner. That was impressive.
Yeah,
way to go.
Yeah, thanks. You know, I have no experience in sales, so you know.
Well, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like you are a pro.
Well, there you go.
It is going well for me out here in the East Coast. I'm loving the fall weather. I'm loving the foliage out here. Is it? Do you have the foliage in your
yard? Oh, we have the foliage. I hate the foliage because I got massive trees in my yard that create a havoc raking situation for me.
That's the thing, you know, because my place is owned by the church that I serve. They have a gardener that comes and does all that. So my experience of the foliage is just getting to look at it and then wait for somebody to go sweep up the leaves.
I am the gardener, and I am not a gardener. So it's my worst nightmare. I can't stand it. I'd rather really do anything other than yard work.
Yeah, I get that. So, but anyway, so all right, where are we at in the book of Acts? We are Acts 23, verse 12. Man, we are moving through this book. I mean, certainly much faster than we did through Matthew. And in large part because the book of Acts is just, it really is narrative. I mean, it's a historical retelling of events, at least the Luke's version of what happened with the early church. And right now we're at a place where there is a lot of heat surrounding Paul. And so we pick it up in verse 12 of chapter 23. It says, when it was day, the Jews made a plot and bound themselves by an oath neither to eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. Now, before we go any further, I should just give you a little bit of background. In our last session at the very beginning of chapter 23, Paul is really clever. He uses the doctrine of the resurrection to pit the Pharisees and the Sadducees against each other, and they get really angry and get really upset. And so he is able to kind of buy himself some time from that. Nevertheless, he's still imprisoned. And so when we come to this passage, it appears that a number of the Jewish leaders are really, really furious with him. And they've made an oath neither to eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. So these guys are definitely living their holiest life now.
I feel like there's no possibility that they kept this oath.
There is no possibility that they kept this oath.
Unless they straight up died.
This is the legalist, you know, breaking the law in order to uphold the law. This is that famous thing that we've seen all throughout the book of Acts, and for that matter in the Gospels too. So it says there were more than 40 who made this conspiracy. They went to the chief priests and elders and said, "We have strictly bound ourselves by an oath to taste no food till we have killed Paul. Now, therefore, you, along with the council, give notice to the tribune to bring him down to you, as though you were going to determine his case more exactly, and we are ready to kill him before he comes near." Good grief, man.
This is insane. I mean, think about going to the guys like, "We're not going to eat until we kill him." I don't know what kind of threat this is. Like, okay.
Like, it's like literal bloodthirstiness.
It's like your kid being like, "I'm not gonna eat until you give me this thing." I'm like, "All right, game of chicken on. We'll see who blinks first." And I think you will eat.
And remember the reason that they got so upset when they went really broke them. In last week's podcast, we talked about the fact that when Paul mentioned that God now had made a way for the Gentiles to be a part of his kingdom, that's when they really lost it. And so this is really about Paul advocating for Gentiles being able to be a part of the kingdom with them that really fries them, so much so that they're like, "This guy needs to go."
Yeah, I mean, and what they're trying to get them to do is say like, "Hey, here's what you need to do. You need to tell the council that, or the you need to tell the tribune that you're going to bring him down here and pretend like you're going to determine his case more exactly. To pretend like you really want to get to the bottom of this. And then on the way to bring him down, we'll kill him."
Yeah, this is straight up mob stuff, man. I mean, this is no different than like what the mob would do. I mean, this is nasty stuff.
And these are the religious leaders.
Yes, yes. Well, that's not so shocking. If you know, once you read the Gospels, you know that this isn't always too surprising to see the religious leaders not acting all that religious. So it says, verse 16, "Now the son of Paul's sister heard of their ambush. So he went and entered the barracks and told Paul. Paul called one of the centurions and said, 'Take this young man to the tribune, for he has something to tell him.' So he took him and brought him to the tribune and said, 'Paul, the prisoner called me and asked me to bring this young man to you, as he has something to say to you.' The tribune took him by the hand and, going aside, asked him privately, 'What is it that you have to tell me?' And he said, 'The Jews have agreed to ask you to bring Paul down to the council tomorrow, as though they were going to inquire somewhat more closely about him. But do not be persuaded by them, for more than 40 of their men are lying in ambush for him, who have bound themselves by an oath neither to eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now they are ready, waiting for your consent.' So the tribune dismissed the young man, charging him, 'Tell no one that you have informed me of these things.' Then he called two of the centurions and said, 'Get ready 200 soldiers with 70 horsemen and 200 spearmen to go as far as Caesarea at the third hour of the night. Also provide mounts for Paul to ride and bring him safely to Felix the governor.'" Just think about how serious this threat is against Paul and how seriously this tribune is taking it.
Well, this guy doesn't want to be involved in some kind of conspiracy to murder a Roman citizen.
That's exactly right. Is it because the tribune all of a sudden has this great endearing love for Paul? No, not at all. It's the tribune knows that Paul is a natural born Roman citizen and that he cannot allow him to be killed or be caught up in this supposed conspiracy for him to be killed. And so, I mean, get ready 200 soldiers.
Yeah, he's taking this very seriously. He is not going to let this happen.
70 horsemen, 200 spearmen to go as far as Caesarea. So, I mean, he is pulling out all the stops to make sure that Paul is protected. So just in case anything does happen to Paul, he's covered. He can say, "Listen, I did everything I could to protect our fellow citizens." That's what he's doing here. So he wrote a letter to this effect: "Claudius Lysias, to His Excellency the Governor Felix, greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and was about to be killed by them when I came upon them with the soldiers and rescued him, having learned that he was a Roman citizen.
That's a little bit of an...
This is making him look pretty good.
That's not exactly how that happened, but you kind of left out the... And I was about to whip the living tar out of him when he informed me that I was about to make a huge error.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah, but, you know, there's a little embellishment here. You know, make him say, eh.
Save this citizen, did you?
Yeah. Yeah, verse 28, desiring to know the charge for which they were accusing him, I brought him down to their council. I found that he was being accused about questions of their law, but charged with nothing deserving death or imprisonment. And when it was disclosed to me that there would be a plot against the man, I sent him to you at once, ordering his accusers also to state before you what they have against him. So, you know, one of the things that sticks out to me here, and we mentioned it before, the problem so often with the Jewish leaders when they brought Jesus or in this case when they bring Paul is they expect the Roman governors and Roman proconsuls and these people to be upset about the fact that Paul seems to be contradicting something in the Mosaic law. He's not, of course, but they are upset about they're bringing their legal code, and the Roman leaders are going, listen, he's not breaking any of our laws, so figure it out yourselves. Don't make me do your dirty work.
Yeah, I mean, the Romans are like, yeah, we don't obey your law either. Like, so I mean, we don't care about your law.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And this, of course, is why you had such consternation and difficulty between, you know, the Sanhedrin and the Roman officials like Pilate throughout all of their history, or Herod. There was always great antipathy because the Jewish leaders of the Sanhedrin wanted things to be run according to Jewish law, and the Romans, of course, ran it according to their own way.
Yeah, and this is a very Pilate-like move, too, to be like, your problem now.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to put this in your jurisdiction. So it's like what Pilate did with Herod when Jesus was arrested and tried. And so verse 31, the soldiers, according to their instructions, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. And on the next day, they returned to the barracks, letting the horsemen go on with him. When they had come to Caesarea and delivered the letter to the governor, they presented Paul also before him. On reading the letter, he asked what province he was from. And when he learned that he was from Cilicia, he said, I will give you a hearing when your accusers arrive. And he commanded him to be guarded in Herod's Praetorium. Now, speaking of Herod. And by the way, Cilicia was part of the Roman province of Syria. So this is something that Felix would have at least had some control over. And so that's why Felix says, basically, he determines it's in his jurisdiction. That's what's going on there. And that's why he says, yes, okay, since you're from there, I'll give you a hearing.
Yeah, and it's not the worst thing in the world that he, like, he has him guarded in this prison. This isn't because he thinks he's guilty of anything, even. This is just to protect him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is for his own sake. I mean, it's not because he thinks he's a bad guy or done anything wrong. Exactly.
Because he's not going to wrongfully imprison a Roman citizen either.
Yeah, no one wants that on their shoulders. That's right. It's bad news for them. That's one thing that Rome was very, very intent on making sure people saw the value of citizenship. So we've rolled up to Acts chapter 24, and it says, and after 5 days, the high priest Ananias came down with some elders and a spokesman, one Tertullus. They laid before the governor their case against Paul. And when he had been summoned, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, since through you we enjoy much peace, and since by your foresight, most excellent Felix, reforms are being made for this nation. In every way and everywhere, we accept this with all gratitude. Lies. No, they did not.
this is so gross.
Yes. Oh, goodness. But, you know, they're doing what they need to do to get them on their side.
I mean, this is so like Jesus, like when the priests come forward and they're just like, oh, I mean, yeah, he's defying Caesar and we love Caesar.
Yes, yes.
Get out of here, man.
It's pretty slimy. And so it says, verse 4, but to detain you no further, I beg you in your kindness to hear us briefly. For we have found this man a plague, one who stirs up riots among all the Jews throughout the world and is a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. It's an interesting phrase, interesting title for the Christians. So apparently that was a title for the Christians early on. Nazarenes. Why is that? Because, of course, Jesus came from Nazareth.
So also one of the verses that Church of the Nazarene, maybe you've heard of it, gets its name from.
Correct. So he even tried to profane the temple, but we seized him. Man, how similar is this to, the trial of Jesus? They just go that down the same route, Even tried to profane the temple, but we seized him. By examining him yourself, you will be able to find out from him about everything of which we accuse him. The Jews also joined in the charge, affirming that all these things were so. And when the governor had nodded to him to speak, Paul replied, knowing that for many years you have been a judge over this nation, I cheerfully make my defense. You can verify that it is not more than 12 days since I went up to worship in Jerusalem, and they did not find me disputing with anyone or stirring up a crowd, either in the temple or in the synagogues or in the city. Neither can they prove to you what they now bring up against me. But this I confess to you, that according to the way, which they call a sect, I worship the God of our fathers, believing everything laid down by the law and written in the prophets, having a hope in God, which these men themselves accept, that there will be a resurrection of both the just and the unjust. So there's Paul again, hinging his case on the belief in the resurrection. And again, because the Pharisees believe in the resurrection, the Sadducees do not. So, verse 16, I always take pains to have a clear conscience toward both God and man. Now, after several years, I came to bring alms to my nation and to present offerings. These are the offerings, by the way, that he alludes to all throughout so many of his letters. This is what he's talking about. While I was doing this, they found me purified in the temple without any crowd or tumult. But some Jews from Asia, they ought to be here before you and to make an accusation, should they have anything against me. Or else let these men themselves say what wrongdoing they found when I stood before the council. Other than this one thing, that I cried out while standing among them, it is with respect to the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial before you this day. So again, you see the clever style that Paul is addressing his case. Notice he does not, at this particular point, mention Jesus by name when he talks about the resurrection. He's going to leave it pretty broad at this point to say, I'm advocating for a belief in the resurrection of the dead.
Right.
Yeah. Just like these people, a good number of them believe in themselves.
Right. And he adds this kind of a good argument where he says, listen, the guys that really stirred up this whole riot thing that you're hearing about, they ain't even here.
That's right. So he's actually arguing, like a good lawyer. This is smart. But Felix, having a rather accurate knowledge of the way, put them off, saying, when Lysias the tribune comes down, I will decide your case. Then he gave orders to the centurion that he should be kept in custody, but have some liberty, and that none of his friends should be prevented from attending to his needs. After some days, Felix came with his wife Drusilla, who was Jewish, and he sent for Paul and heard him speak about faith in Christ Jesus. And as he reasoned about righteousness and self-control and the coming judgment, Felix was alarmed and said, go away for the present. When I get an opportunity, I will summon you. At the same time, he hoped that money would be given him by Paul. So he sent for him often and conversed with him. When 2 years had elapsed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus, and desiring to do the Jews a favor, Felix left Paul in prison. So the administration changes. Politics is normal. Wants to make his constituents happy with him. And this is one of the ways he's going to go about doing it. It is interesting to me that Felix seems to be flirting with Faith.
Yeah, he's also flirting with, you know, extortion.
At the exact same moment.
There's this weird thing going on there where he's like, hey, yeah, like he's hearing the gospel. And what he's hoping happens is that, you know, essentially Paul's, you know, friends will raise money and they'll try to cut a deal to get him out. He's holding him. The reason he's able to do this is that he's quote, in prison, but not really. I mean, his friends can come see him. He's got, like,
all sort of on house arrest.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, this matter hasn't been decided. We're not treating you bad. He's probably feeding them well, and he's got, you know, provisions, all this stuff. It's not like regular jail here. And so he's able to get away with this all the time, being like, if you really want total freedom, I'm hoping that someone comes in and tries to make a bribe to get you out of here, which, of course, doesn't happen. And then this guy gets replaced, and this other guy is like, you know what? The Jews seem happier with Paul in prison, and I'm interested in keeping the peace. I'm interested in being liked by my constituents. I'll just do him a favor, and I'll just leave him in prison. Like, this doesn't seem to be hurting anyone. Again, it's not really, like, I'm not going to get in that big of trouble or anything because, you know, it's nice prison.
Yeah, exactly. And I do find it interesting. I mean, so the word that Luke uses here is this: Paul was preaching the gospel to him about Jesus, that he was, quote, alarmed. Felix was alarmed. And then what does he say when he's alarmed? It's a classic statement. Go away.
Right.
Okay, that's enough. Go away. I don't want to hear anymore. And there's going to be plenty. So there's going to be preaching. If you're preaching Christ, you're probably going to elicit some of these responses that you're seeing in this text. Number one, you're going to elicit sometimes people getting really, really upset, you know, that the scandal of the gospel is for the most scandalous people. It's for the sinners, the Gentiles, the dirty people. But you're also going to get people upset because and they're just going to go away. They're going to cover their ears. They're going to try and deny what they've heard, deny the truth of what the gospel is preaching because it's too uncomfortable for their life as it is right now. And that certainly seems to be the case with Felix here.
Yeah, this is very similar to what happens with John the Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Herod's just like interested in listening to him preach and stuff, but then John's telling him what a corrupt dude he is, and he just can't take it. But you do see this also, this unwillingness in Herod to kill John until he gets sort of manipulated into it. And it seems like something similar like that is going on. Like he's almost afraid to do it. I don't think Felix wants to kill this guy. He's afraid of that. He doesn't want to do anything bad to him. He's interested in what he has to say, but his fear of man and his wanting to keep the peace and appease other people, this is all getting in the way.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, again, this is we have to remember the time factor here. 2 years.
2 years, man. Yeah.
I mean, so this is not something, it feels like when you read it that it's just boom, bing, bang, boom, it's happening real quick. But this is a long, long process where Paul is imprisoned. And so we come upon chapter 25. Now, 3 days after Festus had arrived in the province, he went up to Jerusalem from Caesarea, and the chief priests and the principal men of the Jews laid out their case against Paul, and they urged him, asking as a favor against Paul that he summon him to Jerusalem, because they were planning an ambush to kill him on the way. Festus replied that Paul was being kept at Caesarea, and that he himself intended to go there shortly. So, said he, let the men of authority among you go down with me, and if there is anything wrong about the man, let them bring charges against him. After he stayed among them not more than 8 or 10 days, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day he took his seat on the tribunal and ordered Paul to be brought. When he had arrived, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood around him, bringing many and serious charges against him that they could not prove. Paul argued in his defense, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar have I committed any offense. But Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, said to Paul, do you wish to go up to Jerusalem and there be tried on these charges before me? But Paul said, I am standing before a Caesar's tribunal where I ought to be tried. To the Jews, I have done no wrong, as you yourself know very well. If then I am a wrongdoer and have committed anything for which I deserve to die, I do not seek to escape death. But if there is nothing to their charges against me, no one can give me up to them. I appeal to Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with his council, answered, to Caesar you have appealed, to Caesar you shall go. Now, what's the significance of that, Dan?
Well, this is a little tricky here. So he's trying to get him to say, like, yeah, go try me over there, knowing that this is going to be totally corrupt. And getting him to ask for, essentially, to lay down his Roman rights and be tried as a Jew by the Jews. Mm-hmm. This is what he's, so he's trying to get the Jews what they want this way. He can't just give it to them because yes. Paul's a Roman citizen. I mean, he can't just do it that way. But if Paul asks for it, well, that's different. But yes. Paul's not going for this in any way, shape, or form. He's like, no, I'm exactly where I should be. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to do it this way. And and then he makes this move where he says that, look, I appeal to Caesar, because he knows that this guy's just going to keep this going on forever.
Yeah.
And so appealing to Caesar is essentially like appealing to the Supreme Court. Like, he's like, all right, that's it. Like, let's take this all the way up.
Yeah. This is a big deal. I mean, so he's going to be, this is his way of getting to Rome. This is his way of getting to the capital. And remember, I mean, this is exactly what Jesus had told him would happen, that he was going to get there. And he does. He does get to Rome eventually. Now, it is interesting that at the time that he does appeal to Caesar, the Caesar he's appealing to doesn't have the best reputation historically. I mean, we're talking about the Emperor Nero.
Right. Not a huge fan of the Christians.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so initially he's not terrible, but he gets really terrible not too long after he begins his reign. And I mean, to the point where, like, he blames Christians for major problems in the city. Christians become a convenient scapegoat for him and his own failures. And so eventually it will be Nero that brings Paul to the end of his life.
Right. And I don't think, like, Paul's obviously not afraid of death. I mean, he says so right here that he's not afraid. And this isn't just a line that he spits out. I mean, like, in Paul's letters, you see, like, he's not concerned about death at all. Mm-hmm. He makes this move because this guy's going to keep this going on forever, and Paul is trying to get, like, this is Paul's way. It's not only the way that Paul will end up getting to Rome. Paul does it on purpose to get to Rome.
That's right. This is the way he's going to be able to preach the gospel at that time to the capital of the world.
Right, right. So that's what this is about. This is not about avoiding death because he's afraid. I mean, I would be trying to do that, I'm sure. But if you read Paul's letters, you just can't get that impression. I mean, even throughout Acts, you just can't get that impression. Like, he's not afraid of that. To live as Christ, to die is gain, man. Like, yeah. he's ready to go whenever. But he knows that he's been told he is supposed to go to Rome, and he's like, look, this guy's going to just do this forever.
Yeah, it's just going to stall out.
It's been years now. So he's like, I appeal to Caesar. Get me to Rome. I'll go deal with that.
Well, and this is really a fulfillment of what was said in the very beginning of this book. So Luke is bringing us, there is a structure to this narrative. Remember, Jesus said to his apostles, you will preach the gospel to starting in Jerusalem, then Judea, then Samaria, and then to the ends of the earth. Rome really represents the ends of the earth at this point. This is the gospel going to all the world.
It is.
That's the point.
And that's where we got to leave it. Guys, we've probably got about two more episodes in Acts. That's what it's looking like. I mean, it's just a guess, but I'm guessing two more and we will be done. Where will we go next? Well, you'll just have to wait and see. We've got two more of these as we finish up Paul's journey. And if you're wondering, how are we going to fund this journey into whatever we're going to do next? Well, that's a good thing you asked, because you can help us. Every little bit helps. You can become a supporter. You can go over to Christ Will Fast or 1517, or just in the show notes. If you're listening to this on your podcast app or iTunes, right there in the show notes, there's a link to donate. and you can become a supporter. And if you are one of those people who support and make this possible for everyone else, we do appreciate it. Not just this, all the things that we do. We appreciate it so much. Thank you. Eric, we'll see you next week.
All right. Sounds good.